Downloading. 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Your hosts this week are Stephen Scott.
Hey!
Sean Priest.
Hello!
And Tim Schwartz.
Yes, he's sleeping, I believe. Hello, yes, it is Tech Talk, and it is I, Stephen Scott, back with you once again, as is Sean Priest. Hello.
Hello, I'm wide awake and here, Stephen. How are you?
Yeah, well, good. I'm glad we are. I don't know what's happened to Tim this week, but he's clearly sleeping in his bed. It's a bit early for him in America, you know.
Well, to be fair, we are only speculating. We do not know at this minute, but yes, he's asleep.
Yeah, of course he is. What else is he doing? We have got Scientific Guy Chris back with us.
Hey, hello, everyone.
Oh, it's so nice to be back.
I'm sort of between Tim and Sean. I'm partially awake.
Partially awake.
Partially yeah. awake. It's been a
we
long day.
We couldn't ask for any more.
I've got a new baby girl, you know. It's rare I sleep these days.
Oh, that old excuse, is it?
Is that like a new category? So we've got blind and partially sighted, and now we've got partially awake.
That's the one, yes.
Yeah. I must live in that state most of the time, actually, yeah. Okay, well, we have got lots to talk about this week. Lots of emails, which is why Chris is here and ready to go. How many emails have we got? Must have like millions.
It is 1.2 million emails today.
That's what I was thinking about, yeah. So we've got emails galore. We also are going to be talking about... I can't wait. I can't believe I'm going to say this. Another Apple event's coming. Hey!
Oh, it's like heaven.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm so excited. We're going to talk about that. And we're also going to be meeting Erica Cram today. Erica Cram is from Netflix. Yes, this is going to be a good one, actually. Over the past couple of weeks, you've heard us talking to people from the BBC and from Microsoft. But today... we're going to be hearing from Erica Cram from Netflix, and she has got some news for us that I don't think anyone else is talking about regarding audio description on Netflix. It's very exciting.
Oh, stay tuned.
Yeah. Oh, very good. Yeah, stay tuned. Thanks for that, Sean. Yes. Shall we get into the emails, though, first? Don't we should just do emails?
It's been an age since we got any emails, so yes, we got to get this cleared out.
No, hang on. It's not been an age since we've got emails. We've had loads of emails. We just haven't had time
to
get to them.
Okay, got to the emails, you know, and we're so thankful for the emails. We love them.
We
do. It's our duty, Stephen.
We love them so much, we made a jingle.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day.
Doorbell.
Ding dong. Here's your mail today.
And Sighted Guy Chris is here.
I forgot how silly this show is.
I know. I have to tell you, this is a technology show. You'd never believe this, would you? No other technology show sounds like this. They're all so boring.
Well,
this is fun.
The thing is, I appreciate, of course, the emails, because if the emails weren't here, I wouldn't be here either. So
yeah.
Let's...
No, well, okay, yeah, that's a fair point.
No, he wouldn't.
It is entirely true. Okay, our first email today, lads, is from James, who says, "Hi, gang, and this is regarding Nadia struggling with getting context, correct words via dictating with Dragon."
Oh, yeah, yeah.
"I wonder if she would benefit from software such as ClaroRead, Read and Write, Grammarly, or Hemingway. The former two are commercial software, primarily aimed at people with dyslexia and therefore have advanced checking facilities. The latter two are more general tools to aid good and accurate writing. There are free versions available. You may have to copy-paste text into them rather than getting corrections in real time. I suspect the problem with all of these may be their accessibility, in particular that they often highlight issues by underlining words which may not be apparent to a blind user. But if I've not used all of them and don't use a screen reader myself, so I can't judge, but I do hope that helps." And that's from James.
Thanks, James. Yeah, I mean, this is a kind of ongoing conversation, isn't it, Sean? We've had this come up time and time again.
That's right. So Nadia, to just give a bit of backstory here, it's exciting. Nadia is an author and she's using Dragon Naturally Dictate, which is a fantastic dictation program. But she's finding trouble with words like there and there and read and read and whatever else, the context is getting confused and she has to go through afterwards and manually change and check the context. So as James suggested there, things like Grammarly, I've been seeing adverts for that all over YouTube. I've wasted hours and hours on there. There's things like the Grammar Checker in Word, and there are separate services to check your grammar. Again, my concern is the accessibility of these things. Like James said, I'm not that confident that these things are going to be accessible. But I don't know. It may be an answer. I'm still... Nadia is using an older version of Dragon Naturally Dictate, and I'm hoping that the context algorithm has got better in later versions. I think, actually, I'm going to contact Dragon themselves and ask them if they can comment on this, because it seems like a valid concern. You know, the context, it shouldn't be this difficult.
No, it shouldn't. No. I must say, this is what kind of puts me off the whole text creation. Since using JAWS, I've just not enjoyed that experience at all. So I don't know how Nadia sits and writes books with the inability to read back what she's... And, you know, to make sure that the text is right. I mean, I find it difficult enough to send an email to Chris. You know, but it's just, and I'm hoping... Because I know I always get this thing, this message that pops up whenever I send an email that says, "You haven't checked your spelling," which means I know I've screwed something up royally. And, you know, my favourite at the moment has to be breast versus best. I always write breast Stephen. And I don't know why, but that seems to be the way that I type for some reason.
I've been wondering why you've been sending me breast wishes.
There you are. Well, breast wishes is my new thing. So if you get an email from me that says that, you know why. I was thinking...
That's too Freudian for me to even think about.
But I will say that I think a lot of it is, you know, the time going back. I mean, like, for example, handle. I remember writing handle and it... JAWS spoke it fine, but it kept saying something, and it didn't tell me there was anything wrong with that, because it had spelled it E-L, not L-E. Yeah. Because obviously I do refer to the great artist,
Martin
composer,
Handel.
Whatever, yeah. I don't know. But, you know, I refer to that person all the time in my emails. I mean, there is one way I solve this problem, and I've suggested this to other people as well. Right at the bottom in your signature, sent using JAWS software, apologies for any errors. because then at least people have got an understanding as to why I'm sending them breast wishes.
Can you do that in a book, though? Could you put that in the...
Yeah, you put that at the end. Written using dictation, good luck.
We've had some great responses to this and people suggesting workarounds. And they all, you know, they're great suggestions, but it does, as Nadia have said before, it does interrupt with the flow of writing, the process of writing the book. So, yeah, I will email Dragon directly and see if they'll comment on this.
Nadia's clearly a smart person. Right, let's go to... Let's go to another email, Chris.
So this one's from Roger, and he says, "Hi, Steve.
Hey.
It's finally in stock." At least that's how I think he's writing it. "I just placed my order for the Orbit Reader 20 at the RNIB shop. Available as from today for an ex-VAT price of £449, but discounted to £399 for RNIB Connect members. It's product code HT358. Like you, Steve, I am learning Braille, so I am hoping that it will be a huge help in picking up Braille skills. You may want to mention it on Tech Talk, as we are, so that other interested people will know that it is now available. I enjoy listening to the show each week. Take care, Roger Hallhead."
Yeah, and we have been talking about it a lot, but of course our emails, we have been a bit behind on the emails, so Roger's email came in just as it was launched, actually. So thank you for sending that in, Roger. That code is going to become... more well-known than the Orbit Reader's name itself, that product code. But yeah, you can get it from the RNIB shop, finally. It feels like it's been an age since... I mean, we've been talking about this for years.
Oh, we have. And it's like, you know, unicorn tears. It's amazing. And it's hard to believe it's actually here, but...
Hen's teeth.
Hen's teeth, unicorn tears. All right, you have yours, I have mine. Yeah, yeah. Don't bring me down. But I got to say, I would love... to hear some audio or someone an email with someone who's actually used this, because I don't use Braille. Stephen and Tim, we all don't use Braille. So I'd love some feedback on this. Everything I've heard so far, people are loving it. You know, the Braille display is meant to be so crisp. So yeah, it's a good thing. There's no negatives to it so far.
No, definitely not. In fact, we got an email in this week from Julie Rodaway, who sent me an email saying, you know, would we like a review of it? The short answer is yes. We'd love you to send in a review. And if any of you are using it already, Roger in particular there, you know, just record something on a device, Victor Reader or something, if you can send it in to us and email and attach the audio file of what you're doing with it. I am interested in this. I mean, I have to tell you a quick story. I have been trying to find a Braille class for what feels like as long as I've been waiting for the Orbit Reader. And the other day, I finally stumbled across one. Not literally, but I did stumble across this class. Someone had mentioned it to me and said, oh, did you go to the Forth Valley Sensory Centre? And I said, no. And then someone else said to me, oh, you can't go there because they've stopped it now. And I thought, right, do you know what? The only way to know the answer is to call them. So called them up, and the Forth Valley Sensory Centre, which, if you don't know where that is, if you're somewhere else in the UK, it's kind of in between Glasgow and Edinburgh, isn't it? It's kind of in the middle. And it's a resource centre and facility for blind and partially sighted people. In fact, people of many sensory impairments, not just blind people. And I called up, and they said, yes, we do have a Braille class. However, two things. There's a waiting list.
Wow.
And you don't live in the area. Right. So apparently not living in the area means I've got to pay something, which is fine. I'm cool with that. I don't mind that. And I imagine the fee will be very small anyway for the class. And to me, it's worth it. I don't mind paying. This is this thing. I don't mind paying for these things. I'll pay for it. Just can somebody teach me this thing?
Well, that's the thing.
I can learn Chinese Braille tomorrow. You know, I want to learn Braille.
Oh, listen. I don't think Braille is dead. It's so hard to get hold of any resources or training classes. My local authority, I had exactly the same issue. There's no call for it. We don't have any materials or any classes. I had exactly the same experience. And it's frustrating.
But I mean, Chris, you know, we talk about this in the radio station all the time, don't we?
Yeah.
And we hear about Braille. In fact, on the Daily Connect, you know, that you
we have listeners actively sending us information saying, I would love to learn Braille, but there's nothing in my area. Even the people who used to do it no longer do it. So we're encouraging people to get in touch with us. And now Stephen and I are looking for classes for the for people who are wanting to learn. But Sean, you said that it's not quite dead. But if people aren't putting the resources in to make these classes happen, then how long does it really have?
Exactly.
That's right. Worry. People are killing it. You know, it will die out. And it's a shame because it is so useful. As a person who doesn't use Braille, I can see the benefits of it. And as I lose more and more vision, you know, even at my age, I'm 45 and I think, am I too old? I'm never going to get up to the incredible levels I've seen people use Braille at. But still, it's going to be useful and it's something I need.
Who was that guy that was in The Martian? Remember that film, The Martian?
That would be Matt Damon.
Matt Damon, right. So basically, Braille is Matt Damon.
Oh, here and, we go.
Everyone. And Salvation is the spacecraft that's coming to pick him up in that movie. Will it get to him before he dies? And that's where we are at the minute with Braille.
Okay.
I wish I slept in as well.
But honestly, I mean, it seems to me that there's two worlds. And what I mean by that is that you've got now the Orbit Reader, which is now, I would say, an affordable or more affordable device than previous devices, right? But you don't have anyone to teach you Braille. So if you don't know Braille and you think, well, this is the moment, this is my time to learn, where do you go? So you've got the device at last, but you don't have the capability to learn. And I just think someone's missing a trick here. There's opportunity. If there's some entrepreneur listening here thinking, I've got an idea, then, you know, this is it.
Well, therein lies the rub as well, because the more people who aren't actively able to learn to use Braille, then Orbit doesn't sell their refreshable Braille display, which means they stop making it, which means that the desire for Braille goes away even further.
That's right. And actually, it's the technology that's key to keeping the whole thing alive, because I think the mistake has been made for years. People think of Braille as paper, physical paper and Braille. And that's a mistake, because now we're moving towards all this technology and we have all this stuff that helps us access. And, you know, the great thing about the Orbit Reader is that you can connect it to your iPhone, you can connect it to an iPad, an Amazon Kindle, all that stuff. And I think that's really important for people to understand that, you know, there isn't a divide anymore. It's not a case of it's Braille or a computer with JAWS, or it's Braille or a smartphone. They can be combined. And I think we've kind of maybe just arrived at this point a little bit too late, and all the resources have gone. And that's a real shame, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd agree with that. It just seems like this is a couple of decades too late, you know. When you think of Braille, I just think of the massive cast iron Perkins machine and cutting crowds of people down as I'm walking through and bales of Braille paper, which is really hard to get hold of. I think the cheap, affordable, I won't say cheap, affordable Braille displays are definitely the answer. But we need the resources to go along with it.
Braille giving postman hernias since 18 whatever. It's quite an incredible thing. But yes, it's good to, and I'm glad Roger mentioned the Orbit, because it is always worth mentioning. It is available from RNIB's shop. So far, still in stock. That's good news, actually. I'm glad to hear that. I know lots of people are out there getting them, so about time as well. Right, Chris, what else?
Our next one comes from Alan McKee, who says, "Hi, Stephen, Sean, and Tim. Thanks for reading my email out last week and today. This is an article on the Cool Blind Tech website about a company working with the RNIB who are designing an accessible smart meter, which says in the article that the smart meter has high contrast, large buttons, and speech built in. Could you get someone from the RNIB to come on your show and talk about this new smart meter? Also, on the Blind Bargains podcast, we had a very good feature on the new update for MS Windows, but the new update has been postponed for later due to problems with the latest update. Also, this is a very good article on update for Narrator. The main new feature in Narrator is the new standard keyboard layout and is a long link and has a link to a long list on shortcut keys on the podcast. After the update for Windows comes out, you can, Stephen, Sean and Tim, try the new update for Narrator so that you can give a true opinion of what you now think of Narrator. Keep up the great show that you have, and it would be a good idea if your show could be an extra half hour longer.
Oof,
kind regards, Alan McKee.
Well, we'll talk to the big people again, but, you know, big people said no last time. Two things there, I guess. Smart meters. Still, we are trying to get someone on to talk about this. I know that the people who are involved in a whole pile of other stuff at the minute. So the person I'm trying to get on the show hasn't been available yet for us, but I know is keen to come on. So we will have someone on to talk more about smart
meters. Them down, Stephen.
I am trying.
Come on, we got to trap them in the cupboard somewhere.
I'm trying, honestly. Okay. But yes, we will get someone on to talk more about that because it is a really important subject. Not so much to talk about the smart meters, but the lack of ability to get a hold of one and also to almost get the companies to understand they have them seems to be the problem. It's almost like, well, we don't have these things. But you do. And that seems to be the endless conversation, but no one seems to understand what we're talking about. So that's the bigger problem, and I think that's where RNIB are. But I don't want to put words in the charity's mouth. We'll let them speak when we get them on. The second point, though, now the Windows update that you mentioned there, Alan. Now, Sean, that is out, isn't it? That's now available. They took it back, but it's been reissued.
Yes. Well, so far it's been rolling out. Rolling out has continued, yes. So they started it start of October, I think, and they stopped it again because there were issues with Intel drivers. And more importantly, the biggest issue was that it was deleting files from the documents folder, which is, you know, a big issue. But yeah, as far as I know, they've sorted those issues and rollout has started again.
Yeah, well, I got my copy of it. I got my update. And I only knew that because I'd gone into Narrator settings and there was a heck of a lot of settings in there for all kinds of things, including the new scan mode they've been talking about. So I am keen to try it. I've switched it on and literally switched it back off again, so just to see how it was. But, you know, it's not the best review in the world to go, yeah, well, yeah, I turned it on and it went, hello, and I said, great, and then I turned it off and thought, ooh, that's terrible. That's not a review at all, but I am going to get into this. I'm going to take this one on because...
Ooh.
No, I am, because I've been saying for a long time that I'd kind of like to see a time where Narrator starts to go up against the likes of NVDA and JAWS. I'm not saying it will. I'm not saying this update will make that happen. But I am keen to try and see what they've done, because the key thing that they've brought out here is a more standard layout, if you like, a standard keyboard layout. Which, you know, a lot of screen reader users who are using NVDA and JAWS and possibly Windows Eyes before that will be able to understand and you know, better use. So a lot of reading up to do on it, but I am intrigued.
I've got to say, I don't think that's the issue. For me, it's just unresponsive. It's not quick enough to keep up with a screen reader user. If someone uses NVDA or JAWS, going to Narrator, you're waiting for it to catch up with you. That's the main issue for me. It's not so much the keyboard layout. Of course, it makes it easier to jump between, or if you know one screen reader, then using another one is more familiar. But the actual performance of Narrator, it's not ready yet. It's not mature enough, and that's the main issue. But maybe that's been fixed in the update. With going back to the update being recontinued, is that official? I'm not sure. I've heard people say that it's coming out, but I don't know if Microsoft have actually announced that it's...
They have. They have announced it, but what they've said is it will be a gradual rollout. I mean, I've got mine. You haven't got yours. That means my computer is more important than your computer. That's basically all it means.
Or you're a guinea pig. Yep, that's good.
Oh, that's another way of looking at it, yeah. Right, what else, Chris?
Well, get a jingle ready, because Jules has a weekly wine.
Oh, hang on.
I think that's what Tim had last night.
Jill says, you don't seem to have had any wines lately. Well, I've got one for you. Do you remember way back in February 2017, you did a feature about smart meters?
Ah.
In the feature, It was said that they are accessible, i.e. talking displays were in production and would be available if requested. Well, here we are 20 months later, and I just tried to get one from SSE, the UK's second largest provider of electricity and gas. And guess what? No, I cannot have one. According to the lady I spoke to, they do not have such a thing. She did her very best to be helpful, putting me on hold for quite a long time while she checked with their technical department, but the answer was that they were still only in development and did not know when or if they would be available. The best she could do was make a note on my account with the promise that if they ever exist, I might be able to have one. Accessibility in the UK in 2018? Let's all fall about laughing. At least all of you good people at Tech Talk are still maintaining your usual high standards. Keep up the good work. Regards from Jules.
Hang on a minute. We've got standards. Since when?
And high ones?
I don't wonder about your standards, Julie.
I've had exactly the same experience. I've been speaking to my energy supplier for the longest time saying I want a smart meter. No, they don't exist. And you're absolutely right. That way back when we had that conference and we heard the presentation from, was it Energy Watch, Stephen?
I think it was Energy Watch UK, yeah.
Yes, and they said these are ready. We heard them. So basically you got the actual meter itself and then you've got a separate sort of tabletop display, and that is the thing that's accessible. You'll have speech and high contrast, so that was ready to go as far as we were told, and then nothing, as you said, 20 months later and we've still got nothing. I think it's just a lack of communication because nobody seems to know anything about it.
It's just insane, really, when you think about it. I mean, they're there. I mean, you've probably got them in a cupboard somewhere.
No, see, it would be fine if they said, you know what, there's been a setback. For this reason, the rollout has been delayed. That would be absolutely fine. But as far as we know, they were ready to go way back then. It's just that the energy suppliers seem to know nothing about it, and we've heard nothing on either side. So we're left in the literally dark.
Yeah, this is the this is the orbit of 2019, isn't it? This is the smart meter is going to be the new orbit. It's like, where are these things? And there are some people who've got them. Because we've had people get in contact. So if you've got one of these things, get in touch. Yeah, exactly. Get in touch. Tell us, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Tell us who you are and how you managed to get one, because maybe you hold the key to everything. Maybe there's a secret password or something you need. Like, I don't know, pay your bill or something. Right, what else?
Well, our next email is a request from Kawal, who says...
We don't play songs.
Could someone do a demonstration regarding shortcuts, as I don't understand why shortcuts are needed? Although I know it's making you do things fast, but in what way fast? I can say things to Siri, so is that not fast? Thanks from Kawal.
Totally with you on this one, Kamal. I don't get the point of silly shortcuts at all. Tim, I must admit, is more of an expert on this than I am, and even you are, Sean.
Hang on, even? I don't like the word even in that statement.
Well, put it this way. He spent enough time researching it and actually putting some effort into it. We just tend to go, which is what I did. I'll be honest with you. I think it's got potential, but I don't. To me, it just seems. I think I've used the analogy before. It's a bit like a Lego house. You know, it's like they've given you all the building blocks and said, "Here you go, build your own house." I just want the house.
Well, look, I can see it is slightly confusing. And Tim is the master on this. So we will get Tim to put something together.
Well, we did refer to this last week, actually. We did say we were going to do something on it. And we didn't give Tim enough time at the end of the show to be able to bring this up. And this was actually the email I was referring to when Tim was on last week to talk about this. Because I do think it's a subject that we should get into. It does sound like something that's got potential. If I'm honest, I think it's more for your power users. I don't think for people like me who are, you know, using the phone for sort of, I say basic functions, but, you know, I go on Facebook, I go on Twitter, I send an email, a text, I make a phone call. I'm not creating content on it or any of that stuff, you know. So for me, it's not really a big deal, I don't think. Maybe I'm missing something, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it can be quicker because you can get to a specific app. If that app has been updated and it's opened itself up to the Siri Shortcuts platform, then you can simply say something to Siri and it will get the information from a specific app. Hmm. So it's quicker than doing it manually. You know, if you want a particular bus route you always look up, you can simply say next bus to Siri and it will grab that information and that's it. So from that point, that's why it's a shortcut, because it can get information directly from an app. It's not limited to just what Apple gives you as Siri commands. And also you can make up your own set of actions. So text someone and then turn this smart device on. So you can set up a series of actions and give that just one voice command. Again, saves a lot of time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is slightly confusing. And I think a demo of someone actually stepping through it is probably the best way to describe it or show it off.
Mm. Okay. Right, let's get on to another email then.
Okay, this one will have Whovian's blood boiling, as it comes from Brian, and he says, "Now, as we know, the BBC do a good job on AD on Doctor Who, so last week before the new series, I noticed they were promoting many old series I had watched with AD before, including the last one. However, imagine my annoyance when I found that every single episode had no AD option on the list at all. How could they do this? Very poor of the BBC in my view. Not thinking again? Bah, humbug. Luckily, the new series has it, but it does go to show how lax these broadcasters are getting. Even when they have the files and ability to show AD, they miss it off." That's from Brian.
I'm not even going to comment on that, Brian, because I think you know, I'm sorry, but I think it's time for another bottle of this, quite frankly.
Sounds like you're growling now, Stephen.
I know, it does feel a bit like that. I just get so infuriated by this. I think I mentioned to you, Sean, at one point about the Purge, which is on Amazon Video or Amazon Prime, or whatever they're calling it this week. And I went on to The Purge and I couldn't... I really quite fancied this because I have a bit of an obsession around this whole Purge thing. Not doing it, I just want to clarify. But
only in your head.
You've just not worked out which day of the year you want
it. Yeah, exactly. It's like, should it be Christmas Day, my birthday, which one? But yeah, it was this series and the first episode didn't have AD, so I thought, okay, it doesn't have AD. So I just watched it really close on my iPad. I get to episode 5... and there's like one episode left. I think it's a weekly thing. So it drops every week. And episode 6 is sitting there. I go downstairs, put on my Apple TV, go to The Purge, starts playing it, and it's got AD. And I'm like, hang on, that doesn't make sense. Because I didn't... And I'm thinking, is it maybe a device thing? So I spent a bit of time with it. Basically came to the conclusion, the first episode didn't have AD. Every other one did.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Who's coming up with this, you know?
No, exactly. And I get annoyed, I got to say, I do get annoyed with the iPlayer app, excuse me, because, you know, I watch the latest episode of a show and then think, oh, I watched the ones previous and they won't have AD. Things like that, they're annoying. And I think we've come to a point now where I think we've said this before, well, I definitely have. We just... If something's got AD, if an AD track exists for a program, then that should be... I mean, we need some sort of legislation that says that travels with that program. It doesn't matter who's bought it or what platform it's being shown on. That AD track needs to be part of that. It just drives me crazy when you know there's an AD track out there for a program, and yet for some reason on this platform, you don't have it. It's crazy. You wouldn't get that with subtitles anymore. You know, I know.
Thank you.
Breathe.
It's just infuriating. But, you know, in saying that, you know, we've got the Marrakesh Treaty, which has just been signed, and that took how many years? And what that does is that basically does what we're looking to do with audio description for books. You know, so if they could just maybe add in to that treaty, maybe just sort of stick it in at the end, a little addendum that says, oh, and by the way, this also applies to audio description, and then the world's great again. But that's unlikely to happen. Right, let's get another email.
Okay, this one's a bit more cheerful. It comes from John, and he says, hi, team. Sending this from my Polaris Mini, which I think is the best Braille device on the market. Oof. I wonder if it's possible to look at music high-quality services. A lot of us have smart speakers, but is it worth paying for something like Deezer or Tidal? And how much better does the music sound through these services? Great podcast, always a good listen. All the very best. Keep up the good work. Just acquired my iPhone 8. Very good indeed. And that's from John.
iPhone 8.
Well, thank you, John.
Yeah, thank you, John. iPhone 8, the new blind phone. That's the BE, as I call it, the blind edition.
To be honest, you know, I rarely jump out of my email world, but I'm actually really interested in this as well. Paying a premium.
Yes, get back in your box, will you?
Paying a premium for these music services, how much does the quality actually improve?
Well, this is a question that I've answered myself, because I subscribed to Tidal. Never tried Deezer, actually, but I subscribed to Tidal. It does depend on what you're listening on. Because if you're listening on your Amazon Echo, I don't know if you can listen to it on the Amazon Echo. I suppose you could, pair it with Bluetooth, maybe do it that way.
Yeah, but then you're losing quality anyway.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? So you're losing quality through Bluetooth and all that. But it does depend on the device. Now, I've got a Sonos Play 5 at home, and that would be... And I don't know what the technology is behind this, but it does have to be a certain standard of audio that comes out of the device. And I have to tell you, when I subscribe to Tidal, I could hear it.
Oh, I could hear it.
All right. I tried Spotify. I tried Apple Music. I think Spotify's got better than it used to be. I always found the Spotify music to be quite, I don't know, it was a bit watery for me. It was low quality, 120 kilobit MP3s. It wasn't great. Apple, I think, is 192, so it's a bit better. Get a bit geeky here, sorry. But, you know, it's basically higher quality MP3. And of course, Apple have got their own format, that AAC format, which is supposed to be better than MP3. That's questionable. But certainly Apple Music I've always found to be very good. But Tidal, I could absolutely tell the difference. And I did think, I thought it was good, I just didn't think it was worth the money, because I think it was almost double the cost of Spotify, if not more than double the cost. And I thought, I don't think it's worth it for that, but the sound quality was incredible for it. And actually what it made me do was just basically rip my CDs in full CD quality.
Flat-core.
Yeah, exactly. Not into, you know, CD, not into MP3 quality, but just keep them at full quality and, you know, create my own Tide.
Blake Shelton so good.
that's the thing for me, though. I've struggled to find a difference between... It does depend on what song and genre of music you're listening to, but I struggle to find a difference between something, say, 128 kbps or 160 or 192 or even 320.
Oh, come on.
No. Some songs, I think the compression isn't as obvious.
Pop songs.
So... Well, I don't know.
But I think I'm serious. I think pop songs you can't really tell. I think the lower bitrate you get, you start to lose the bass and the depth and all of that.
That's right. Yeah.
I will say that since MP3 music's come along, quality of music has gone down the drain.
Yes,
I don't mean the artists. I mean just this.
I would argue since Bluetooth speakers came along, the quality has gone down. It's not as important as the amount and on demand music that we get. But look, I think you're right. It's what you're listening to it on. If you've got a £10 pair of headphones you're listening to it on, or just your phone, then honestly the quality doesn't matter. It's all down to what the speaker can reproduce.
That's my point, though, because if you have got
a nice setup, then you will tell a difference. Now, it's up to you to decide whether that's worth the extra money or not.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure myself.
No, but what I'm saying is that if you have got the £10 pair of headphones, don't subscribe to a service that's going to give you
Absolutely.
That high quality, because you won't be able to achieve it. And I've heard all kinds of reports about Bluetooth headphones. Like, I've got the Bose QC35s, beautiful headphones, but, you know, I don't think there's much of an improvement because Bluetooth is dictating the quality to some degree. Whereas if you had them plugged in, then it would be better. I don't know if that helps answer your question, Chris, but...
It does a little, yes. I mean, when you're talking about noticeably different, is it noticeably as different as when you moved from CD or from tape to CD, or is it not quite as noticeable? Because I think for paying the price, the premium price, it would need to be something as noticeable as that.
I noticed the difference from Spotify to Tidal. Uh-huh. That's what I noticed. And you would think I shouldn't notice it there, but I did. But then I'm a bit of an audiophile. I like to listen to things in crystal clear. And I really do listen out for it. Sean's ears are wrecked by listening to years of I have no idea what rock music.
Your voice mainly,
probably. Yeah, it's not my fault. Right. So that answers your question. What else?
Okay, then our next email comes from, and I hope I pronounce this correctly, but I think it's Defrid.
You get a prize if you get it right.
Yes.
Apparently.
Well, we'll find out. Hi guys, I'm a Mac Mini user and I updated to Mojave over the weekend. Since then, I've had two voices running in VoiceOver. Even though I've set Samantha as system voice, I have a combination of her and Daniel reading things out. For example, as I type this email, Daniel is reading out the words I type, but Samantha is reporting that I am pressing the shift key. When I was browsing my emails, she would say from and subject, but Daniel would speak the details. I've played around with VoiceOver in utilities and accessibility in system preferences and in user groups. I've even turned it off and on again. I don't know whether the update to Mojave is relevant or not. Any ideas? Defrid Lewis Smith, and as Stephen says, he offers me a prize if I pronounce it correctly.
I've got to say, I've had the exact same problem. I've recently updated a MacBook Air, and yeah, Daniel will not go away, and I can't stand Daniel. I've heard various reports of people having exactly the same problem. Unfortunately, I haven't heard anyone give a fix for this yet. I would think, you know, like you, I've looked in the VoiceOver utilities and played around with various voices, but no, I can't find a fix for this either. I'm going to do a bit of a deep dive, and hopefully I'll have an answer for next week.
I have a rather weird problem because I have a bug from the past that I've managed to surface on my Mac Mini. I use El Capitan on mine, which is a good few years back, because the Mac Mini is too old to really run anything else. And it runs happily with that. The only downside is that for some reason, VoiceOver jumps between the internal speaker and the sound card that I've got plugged in. I've got a little USB sound card. And it kind of bounces between. So sometimes I get it in my ears when I wear my headphones, and sometimes it's coming out of the speaker on the... And it just decides randomly just to, I think I'll save over here, and then I think I'll talk to you in your ear. And you're like, oh, I wish you could make your mind up. So I'm finding bugs from the past as well as the future. So it's incredible.
Windows is the answer.
Windows is the answer to everything. Narrator, that's the future. Right, I think we're going to leave it there for the emails. Have we got lots more?
We've got two.
Right, I think we're running short of time. Let's see how we do at the end of the show, because I want to get in our interview this week with Erica Cram. I got a chance to sit down with her a couple of weeks back, and we talked a lot about Netflix and how they managed to get into the world of audio description. Very exciting stuff. And I'm really glad that she was able to join us here on the show in RNIB's 150th year, which is something we also touch on. Erica, great to have you here on the show.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
How did you end up working at Netflix?
Yeah, so I went to school in San Diego for film and television production. I always thought I would end up on set, but it turns out those are long hours, long days. So I got a job. My first job in Los Angeles was at a post-production sound facility in Culver City. And there I manage projects from start to finish, audio restoration, mixing, etc. And I was there for about 4.5 years when I got a phone call from Netflix to come over. And that was in early 2015. And I could not pass up that opportunity. So I joined the team over at Netflix. What at the time it was called Content Operations. And I've been here for 3.5 years since.
I think for the people who are in the UK, there's maybe less of an understanding as to Netflix's background itself, because it wasn't always about streaming, was it? It was like, what would you say, DVD rental? That was its kind of background, wasn't it?
Right. So Netflix started as a DVD by rental company many years ago. And I think it was always the aim to move into streaming, but they started with DVDs. And so by mail, you could pay a monthly subscription fee. And you can get one or two discs at a time. You used your online queue to choose the movies you wanted, and they'd ship to your door, and then you'd send them back and vice versa. And around 2007 is when they started streaming. And so you had this combination of discs, and you can log on to the website and stream movies. But at the time, most people didn't quite have the internet to do streaming. It was all new. So a lot has happened between 2007 and now.
That's quite incredible, isn't it? I mean, we're talking 11 years ago. And, you know, it doesn't seem that long a time yet.
Yeah.
As you say, so much has happened. The internet's improved so much, and it's allowed companies not like Netflix to actually do what they do, which is fantastic. I guess my question, though, is one aspect of Netflix for blind and partially sighted people has been the growth and the accelerated growth in the amount of audio-described content that has appeared in a very short space of time, another major change in a very short space of time. How did that happen? How did Netflix end up doing that? And what kind of kicked it off for the company?
Yeah, so it's an interesting story. So back in 2013, before I was at Netflix, we launched our first Netflix original series, which was House of Cards. And so that shifted a lot of attention and spotlight to Netflix as a new platform and a new place to get original content. And it was towards the end of 2013, early 2014, when we started to hear from the visually impaired and blind community about audio description and that it was something that they wanted and something that they would use. And so in early 2013, the internal discussion started. As you know, it doesn't happen overnight. They spent the next several months working on the technical requirements to support the audio description asset on the Netflix platform. And what's interesting about Netflix is it's not just for one television set. We've got multiple devices. And we also had to spend some time gathering best practices for audio description. So all of 2014 was spent getting prepared for the audio description to be available on our service, as well as putting together a Netflix style guide, etc. And so in the spring of 2015, we launched Daredevil. And unfortunately, it was a miss that we launched it without audio description. After having spent all this time preparing and getting ready for audio description, it was just a miss by a few weeks. But we launched Daredevil without audio description, and as you know, it's the main character is a blind superhero. So within a few weeks of Daredevil launching, we made additional audio description available for other titles that had been in the works for a few months as we were preparing for this launch of AD. And so probably like around April or May of 2015, we launched Daredevil and then a few of our other originals with audio description. So Orange is the New Black, House of Cards, etc. And then by summer of 2015, we were up to about 100 shows. And then kind of out the gate from there, we made a commitment to create audio description for all of our Netflix originals. And so as most people know, we've gone pretty wild with our amount of content. With the amount of content that we have. Since then, it's been something that we've been doing. And then on the licensed side, we've worked with our studio partners and made it a contractual obligation to provide audio description to Netflix if it's available and they have access to the files. So for some of our licensed shows from the networks, so BBC, NBC, ABC. They provide audio description to us if they broadcast with AD.
So that might go some way to answer my next question to you, which is a question a lot of people in the blind and partially sighted community have. And that is, why are some programmes that actually have been audio described before for television, say, and even for movies as well, why are they not available with audio description on Netflix?
Well, that's a good question, and probably one of our biggest challenges. I don't begin to understand all the intricacies of licensing content. That's not my forte. But what I do know is that when a show is broadcast, say, in the UK, and then it comes over here to the US, sometimes it passes hands from the broadcast network to a new licensee and vice versa. We've got shows here in the US and maybe in Italy or France or Spain passes hands to sub-licensees. And so I think our challenge is that the sub-licensees that we get content from don't always know that the audio description exists from the original broadcaster, nor do they have access or rights to those files. So I think that is where we run into our biggest obstacle. It's finding where the audio description is, how we can get to it, and making sure that we have the rights to do so.
Now, looking away from the present for a second, and it sounds like you do this anyway a lot, looking at the future, what do you think the TV experience will be like in 150 years for people with sight loss? And I know that's a big question to ask, but
That's a huge question.
And it's an almost impossible question, I guess. But, yes. But I just wonder from your vantage point, you're clearly thinking ahead, you know, maybe not 150 years, but, you know, certainly in the near future, what do you think about the way that you're creating television and film these days?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think in the near future, so the next few decades or so, synthesized voice technology is going to be so incredible. I've already seen the beginning of it. We've done a couple experiments with synthesized audio description. And while it's good, I think it's just the beginning, and I'm really excited to see what it can do. So I think in the next few years to decades, we'll definitely get much further along. However, it's so hard to imagine what storytelling will look like 150 years from now. I imagine stories will be told through many layers of immersion beyond sound and vision. I mean, if you look how far we've advanced in the last 150 years, and you think about what technology has enabled us to do, I can't even begin to fathom the possibilities for the future. But I think it's going to be good.
I also just want to ask you about the relationship that Netflix has with RNIB. Of course, RNIB is celebrating its 150th anniversary. This year is a big year for the charity. And one of its goals, I guess, has always been to work with as many people as possible to make life better for blind people, wherever they are. How important has it been to get feedback, which has been, I know, one of the key relationship parts that you've had with RNIB, getting feedback from people like me who are visually impaired and just want to stamp about, you know, here's what's good, here's what's bad, here's what whatever, that feedback. How important is that?
That's a great question. It's so important to us that there's an open dialogue, and I think it's great to hear the good things. It's so nice and heartwarming to hear the positive stories about how audio description has helped those who use it. But Netflix has a very strong culture of feedback in itself. So internally, it's always a checks and balances, and we're always very open and giving with constructive feedback. And I don't think it differs for our external partners. So when people take the time to let us know what's not working or what we can do better, we really do listen. I love hearing the feedback on either side, but it helps us understand what we're doing right and what we're not doing right and what we can work on. So very open to it. And I'm so happy that we do have a relationship with the RNIB, and I hope it continues.
Can I pick up on something you said earlier about Netflix and the style guide? Because I am a user of audio description on Netflix, and one thing I have noticed is that the standard, in my view, and it is my view, the standard of audio description in Netflix seems a lot higher than that of other companies, and I'm talking about companies and certainly broadcasters in the UK. What is it about that style guide that's got it so right? And maybe you could maybe tell us, if possible, how you come to get that right.
Yeah, so the style guide has been around for a few years, like I said, in 2014, before we ever launched audio description. A lot of time and effort was put into curating what the style guide and requirements were, and it's open to the public, so anyone can take a look at those standards. It's not lengthy, but I think where the real assurance comes in is the quality checks that we do and the standards that we hold our partners to, so those that are creating audio description for us. We have a very high bar when it comes to the quality, and I think the same can be said for our video assets and our time text assets as well. So audio description was no exception. We have no problem pushing back if it's not to what we expect in our standard. And I think that that is something that's that applies to Netflix across the board. But I know at the beginning, the style guide was created through research and speaking to people who use it and people who create it and working with vendors that have done this for decades. So a lot of thought went into it. So we have a really great foundation to work from. I also think that a lot of it comes from the quality check once it comes to Netflix and making sure that it meets the needs. Obviously, when we work with our licensed partners, it was created for broadcast, so we don't always have as much flexibility. But we do everything that we can to make sure that the expectation on your end is met and exceeded. And if we're not doing that, we want to hear about it. So we take it very seriously, and I think that that's where it shows in the work that we do.
One of the criticisms I hear most about Netflix and audio description is that in the audio description category, of which you go into find all the programs with audio description, is that they're essentially all lumped together. And some people have suggested that wouldn't it be good if, you know, you don't want to see the kids' programs because you're a huge sci-fi fan, or, you know, you get the genre option in there. Is that something that Netflix could do?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I know that on our website, if you go into the audio description section, you can search by a few parameters, which includes genre, the release year, suggestions for you, which will be curated based on your watch history, and then A to Z to find things in alphabetical order. But I do know that that only applies to the website. So that leaves out the TV experience and the mobile experience. So I definitely think there is room for improvement there, that we could apply the same treatment over to our other devices as well. There's definitely some feedback that I'd like to take to our engineering team internally to see if that we can apply that across the board.
Erica, thank you so much for being here on R&IB Connect Radio.
Yes, thank you for having me.
So there you go. That was our interview with Erica Cram from Netflix. Do you know, one thing that stood out there, and we didn't get a chance to get into much more detail with Erica on, was the subject of this synthesized audio description. I'm really intrigued by this, Sean.
I am. I'm in two minds, because it does sound like it would be easier, make audio descriptive tracks easier to produce, cheaper to produce. But does it lose the emotion? But then again, should audio descriptive tracks have any emotion in them anyway? Mm. It brings up some interesting questions.
Same argument Talking Books has had for years.
Yeah, that's true, actually. I mean, I think it maybe should have a bit of emotion in it. But at the same time, you know, when I think about the audio description tracks, like if I watch Stranger Things or House of Cards, they don't tend to have any emotion that I can think of. So no, I don't know if it loses it, but I am intrigued by it. So there are two current series that are on Netflix right now you can actually go and listen to. And I maybe shouldn't say this, because you should maybe find it for yourself. But I'm quite intrigued to see what people think of this. There's two series. One is called Fastest Car, and the other is called A Shot in the Dark. Fastest Car's all about driving, obviously. And the The Shot in the Dark is all about reporters that go out at night to get stories. That one, that series does appeal to me. One is male, one is female, and these are synthesized audio recordings. I'll be very interested to hear your thoughts on that, and I'm sure Netflix would as well. We're almost out of time. Chris, thank you for coming in with the emails.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me for the whole show.
I know you've been here for the whole show. You may as well stay till then. We'll have 2 minutes left. But just before we go, I just want to quickly mention on next week's programme, we'll be just ahead of the next Apple event. Oh,
the excitement
times.
In the room.
Do you know what?
More spending.
Tim, Sean and I sat and we watched the Google event and I was bored to tears. I'm hoping that the Apple event this time around is better. Because, I think we know what's coming. We're going to get new iPads. I think that's fairly clear, isn't it?
Are we all of us here? Thank you, Stephen. That's very kind of you.
Yeah, I'm glad
like
I came.
I'm like Oprah.
You get an iPad and you get an iPad.
No one here gets iPads. But yeah, there's new iPads coming. I think there's also talk of new AirPods. You know, the wireless earpods?
We're going to get iPads, we're going to get a refresh on MacBooks, maybe a cheaper replacement for the MacBook Air. And more importantly, going back to our emails, a MacBook Mini refresh. Yay, about time.
Will you buy one though? Because you've got a Mac Mini, as I have. And
love the Mac Mini.
I do love it, but and what I'd say is if you're blind and you really want to get into the Mac world, then a Mac Mini is brilliant. What I don't like though is they always seem to have them kind of low end. They always seem to be kind of introductory or early, and I think that's a mistake. You know, I'd kind of like to see a more pro version. I want to see an entry level, so everyone can get hold of it, but I'd kind of like to see a more pro version as well for those that want to use it for that, because not all of us need the screen. So.
Exactly. Well, that could be what's coming up in October in the next event.
Anyway, you completely skipped over the point I was making about AirPods.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, so...
Boring.
Well, He says this, and then you'll see them and you'll want them. The new ones apparently are going to have, this is what the rumours are saying, they're going to have noise cancellation, better Bluetooth. You know what I want to see? I want to see them better integrate with the products, because one thing I've noticed is that they are terrible when you're trying to use them between one or more devices. Now, I have to say, that's coming as a voiceover user. So voiceover on the watch, for example, when the watch is talking, you get it trying to, you know, it grabs the audio, and then you go back to your phone and it won't grab the audio back, so your phone's then speaking outside of your headphones. It becomes a pain in the neck, quite frankly. So, you know, I'd like to see them fix that, because Plantronics have managed it. Aftershock's Bluetooth bone conduction headphones, they've managed it.
All right.
Can't Apple manage it? Come on, Apple.
Turned into a rant.
I know, but I'm passionate about this kind of stuff.
Okay. End on a high note. Come on, keep it positive.
We are out. Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome, sir.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
Tim, I hope you're well, wherever you are out there. Get back to sleep, and we'll catch you again next time on Tech Talk. Remember the podcast. It's there. Go get it. Past episodes and all that. And email techtalk@rnib.org.uk. See you next time.